I think that you have so many trademark shots in all of your films, but for you, how would you describe a trademark Danny Boyle shot?
I like to shoot wide, which is more expensive because the lighting's more complicated.
Right.
I like to see characters in a landscape, so it isn't just in here the whole time. And I like actors to physicalize a film, so we actually sense their physicality in a film as well. So I'm always trying to do that, I guess, if you like. And I think when you move the film, rather than keep it static like this, you kind of create a visceral energy, which I love the films to have. You know, they feel like they're working for the audience, you know?
You hear the YouTube comments on like scenes for this movie? People are like, oh my God, I remember when this came out and I've never cried before, but this movie got me to cry.
No.
People, yeah, all the YouTube comments are like really positive on the movie. People going back and being like, I'm so nostalgic for this. This movie
yeah.
in my mind. And you can tell that this is made for a certain type of demographic who maybe never really looked inwards ever. Like probably for like finance bros who like decided to do like ayahuasca trips. Like,
yeah, it feels like the, it kind of feels like the last hurrah of Gen X to me when I watch this movie. It feels like this is the end of a generation.
Yeah.
It's the passing of the torch from Gen X to millennials. But yeah, this is Rotten Rewind. This is a podcast that looks back on the films the critics that they did not invite to their private island to play volleyball. If a film fails to score above the 60% threshold, we get to talk about it right here in this podcast. I'm Max Rue. As you can tell, I'm rolling solo again. Courtney is out of town. She's in Denmark, which sounds way cooler than recording a podcast about Danny Boyle's The Beach. But you know what? Sometimes you gotta take one for the team. And I'm joined by a podcast regular, very talented filmmaker and writer, Alex Colpin. Thank you for coming back.
Thanks for having me, man.
I'm always happy to have you. Yeah, we were gonna do this before she left, and we didn't have a guest because I couldn't really find anybody that was a huge fan of this movie.
I mean, it seems like a hard movie to find someone who enjoys this. And I was thinking about this. You had texted me and you were like, hey, you're the only person I could find that likes this movie. And I had to go back to Letterboxd and look at my rating. I was like, okay, it does say that I like this. And I did give it 3 stars. I have had no recollection of ever watching the movie.
You gave it a little hard. No one can recall watching Danny Boyle's The Beach. They know that they did. They're just not sure when.
Dude, I watched it last night and I can't remember it. Like, it's so forgettable. I mean, there are scenes that stick out of my mind like a sore thumb, but overall, I'm like, what was that? What was that mess?
Once we got into the 2000s for this Auteur Misfire series, we were kind of like, you know what? There was a lot of kind of shifting around and different directors we could have covered. The Beach was one that I think I always kind of kept coming back to because I was like, I hadn't seen it since it came out. And I was like, I wonder how The Beach holds up. Like, I would love to rewatch The Beach and see what it's like fucking 23 years later. I had not seen it since opening weekend in 2000. When I was an 11-year-old boy.
Did he describe like that hype around this movie at the time? Because he's coming off Trainspotting. Did he do anything in between Trainspotting and this?
So he did. So we actually, we covered Danny Boyle's movie right before this called A Life Less Ordinary. That was one of the first episodes we did of the podcast. So we did a little road 90s kind of road trip love story episode with that and Poetic Justice and Excess Baggage starring Alicia Silverstone and Benicio Del Toro. And A Life Less Ordinary, if you haven't seen it, which I'm assuming you haven't, very weird movie. That was his post kind of Trainspotting blank check because Fox Searchlight did Trainspotting. And then he stayed with Fox for Life Less Ordinary. He stays with Fox for a minute here. It seems like that's kind of his studio. But yeah, Life Less Ordinary and The Beach were kind of his blank check movies where they were like, okay, we want to be in the Danny Boyle business. Mm-hmm. We'll let you do whatever you want.
Oops.
Are you a Danny Boyle fan?
Yeah, I love 28 Days Later. I really like Trainspotting and I really like 127 Hours. And then I feel like Slumdog Millionaire and Steve Jobs are pretty watchable movies.
Mm.
But besides those movies, like I remember watching Trance a few years back and I was like, this is awful. This is terrible.
I started watching Trance and I didn't finish it. That was another one that I was like curious about because I hadn't seen it. Because I've weirdly seen most, I want to say almost all of his movies, except for I have not seen Millions. Mm. And I have not seen
Yesterday,
the movie where the Beatles never existed. I have not seen Yesterday. I know all about it. I know about the ending. I don't think I ever need to see it. Have you seen Yesterday?
No, I've been avoiding that like the plague. It's I don't think that's ever going to happen. Even out of just pure curiosity, I just don't want to torture myself.
There's no morbid curiosity I have for it because it just looks so cloying and just like annoying that I was like, there's no enjoyment I could possibly get out of this movie. I also don't have like any particular like affection for the Beatles in a way that would make me want to watch it. Mm-hmm. I did see the John Lennon scene where I think Robert Carlyle plays John Lennon.
What?
Yeah, I think the whole thing is that
at
the end, I could be wrong. Let me see. I want to say it was Robert Carlyle because that's his boy. Dude, I'm pretty sure this is Robert Carlyle.
I mean, I believe you. I'm just like, why?
It is. It's Robert Carlyle. He's an uncredited Robert Carlyle in old age makeup. You heard about that ending, though, right? Where like the whole thing is like the Beatles never existed. And then he goes to John Lennon's apartment and John Lennon's still alive. Because if they never existed, he would have never been shot.
This somehow makes me want to watch it even less now. I didn't realize that was possible.
Holy shit.
I mean, it seems like a movie that gives into his worst tendencies as a director.
Yes. He's not precious, but he's...
Well, he's grossly sentimental sometimes.
Yes, he's a very sentimental director. He borders on precious. He has a very optimistic kind of humanistic streak in him, which is interesting when he does a movie either like this or 28 Days Later or Sunshine. Have you seen Sunshine?
I did, but I also don't remember it at all. I watched it in film school in high school.
I wanted to
rewatch
it.
That's also Alex Garland, right?
Yes. Yeah, I wanted to rewatch it because I hadn't seen it since it came out. But, and obviously Trainspotting is the big one. And it holds up. Trainspotting is great.
It does. Great. It does.
Honestly, I kind of like Trainspotting too.
I haven't seen it.
You know what?
I haven't seen it. It looks
kind of good.
It looks really good too, just on a visual level. It looks like the greatest fan service ever. Like, if you're going to do a sequel to Trainspotting, like, I don't know what else you'd want from that as a viewer.
Yeah. It's like the perfect amount of like nostalgic and kind of like sad and funny. It works. It's good.
And I did see recently that he is going to do, and this is not a joke, 28 months later.
Well, he sat out 28 weeks later, which also isn't that bad from what I remember.
Yeah, there was a cool scene with like a sniper where the whole entire scene is like seen through the scope of a sniper rifle.
Oh,
infrared or something.
I think that was the first movie I ever saw Imogen Poots in.
Huh.
That was like the first time I really noticed
she's
her.
She's really, really young in that movie. Yeah.
She's super young in it. Boyles, he's a director that I don't dislike. I admire him. And sometimes I do really like him. I've never been huge on Boyle. Have you seen Shallow Grave, his first film?
I didn't. I thought that was kind of boring, to be honest.
Okay. I kind of liked it. I liked Shallow Grave. I dug it.
I didn't hate it, and I didn't think it was a mess, but it seemed like all the things he was doing in that movie, he just did way better later on in his films.
Sure. No, I can see that. You know, and then Trainspotting is the breakout. Life Less Ordinary was a huge flop. It's a very bizarre movie. It is a weird love story with Cameron Diaz and Ewan McGregor. Ewan McGregor has horrible hair in it. There's a particular vibe about it that can only be described as like very 1997 to me. The soundtrack is kind of like a vague kind of like trip hopish soundtrack. Delroy Lindo and Holly Hunter play angels in it.
I mean, it's an interesting cast though.
I would never stop anyone from watching it because it's like, I wouldn't say it's good, but it's definitely like a weird one to watch if you have like a kind of itch to watch a weird 90s rom-com, I would say.
Well, I feel like that's also the thing with Danny Boyle movies where it seems like all of the ingredients are there, but they just don't come together. Like, oh, this is a very, all these people are in this movie. Okay. That's interesting. Okay. The soundtrack, that seems like it'll work.
And always then, has pretty good soundtracks.
Yeah. His soundtrack's bang. The beat is no different. I don't think the Angelo Badalamenti score is that good, but all of the
songs that they did it. I was
Okay. Well, he has a few of those scores where it's like literally just insert anyone's name and I would believe
you would never know it. Yeah, to me, I think of this movie as having a Moby score. That's how I associate the movie. It's a very like
the porcelain, right?
Yeah, it's the vibe of the movie. But yeah, I mean, like a quick little brief rundown of the, you know, the rest of his filmography, because he is very weirdly eclectic in a lot of ways. He definitely I think he is the rare filmmaker that can do like a studio hire and bring his own brand and his own style to it. And it's very recognizable. You can always recognize that you're watching a Danny Boyle movie. Yeah, 28 Days Later was kind of the return to form after he flops with The Beach and The Lifeless Ordinary. Obviously, that was a big fucking hit. Millions, I have never seen. I think that was also kind of a like low-key gem that people liked. And then Sunshine, which was kind of a flop. I think they kind of botched the release of it. I don't think they really quite knew what to do with that movie. It has a great cast. Cillian Murphy, Chris Evans, like pre-Marvel, doing like really interesting work. Rose Byrne, Michelle Yeoh, Cliff Curtis. And then he gets his Oscar for Slumdog Millionaire, a movie that I really hate, but...
Well, it's just a crowd pleaser, but it also, like, it only functions if your brain is completely turned off. Like, yeah. Everything is based on chance. Nothing yes. makes sense. There's no reality where this happens.
No.
Like, so you can't even be inspired by it in a certain capacity.
Yeah. It was one of those movies that, like, just, it just came out of nowhere and just, like, swept, I remember. It was, like, an unknown cast, came out of Toronto. People love that thing. Instant crowd pleaser. Fox Search, like, bought it up, threw it into theaters, like, as quick as possible to get it in for awards. And it just, like, was, like, an unstoppable freight train.
And there is a grossness too, and I think The Beach suffers this problem too, where he's sort of, I guess he's not fetishizing like another culture, but he's almost using it as like a sort of way to like lubricate the audience into like, I don't know, some level of like sympathy that wouldn't be there otherwise.
Yeah, and I wouldn't even say that he's like racist. He's just...
No. He's very well-intentioned.
He has big, nice white guy energy where he's just like, oh, wow, isn't this fascinating? And like, he seems genuinely like... into it. I remember seeing Slumdog Millionaire with a sold out crowd in the Valley, and it was like obviously predominantly white people, and I just remember seeing a bunch of white people dancing at the end of the movie during the credits, and I was like, okay. I do like 127 Hours. It's a movie that I have not revisited since it came out, because again, I don't know how many times you're like, let's throw that on.
Oh, it's good. It's good.
It's very good.
I've read a review for it, and all I said was it's National Geographic Saw.
Yes.
I mean, it's incredible. It also got like old white ladies to go see a movie where for 4 minutes someone's just cutting off their arm. That's so sick to me.
It's way better than a movie like Into the Wild. His style is so well suited for that movie. Like, I'm trying to think of other directors that could have made that movie work, and there's not many that come to mind.
Yeah, because he uses montage so much, and he just does that over and over and over in this movie. And yet it doesn't feel like it's a music video or anything like that.
No. It's one of Franco's best performances. He's on easily. It. He's very in it. God, who won Best Actor? Oh, that was the year fucking Colin Firth won. Yeah, I think Franco or Jesse Eisenberg in The Social Network would have been way better winners.
Yeah.
But yeah, 127 Hours. I think Gosling was offered that part first, which is interesting.
Yeah.
I think he said that he had a really bad meeting with Danny Boyle. He was like, we just like did not vibe.
Yeah, because I feel like that might work for Gosling in terms of like he's thinking to himself, I need to have like a role where I really express myself. Like, this is my time to get away from the more cipher driven movies I've been doing. And
yeah, there's not many actors that can internalize emotion the way that Gosling can. He can.
Right.
Obviously, there's a reason he was, you know, so good in a movie like Drive or Only God Forgives, because not many guys can do what he does in those movies. And then, yeah, Trance, which I think people just instantly forgot about. I do want to finish it because I have heard there is a very insane scene where someone goes into Rosario Dawson's pussy.
Sounds about right. Again, I don't remember it, but, you know, it sounds about right.
Okay.
I remember it being kind of visually stunning. You know?
Yeah. McAvoy had a weird career.
Yeah. What was that movie where he just does a bunch of cocaine?
Oh, God. Filth.
Filth. Was that around the same time?
I think so. It's not very good.
And then
good.
He did Split.
Split, which he's good in that movie.
Yeah, he's very good in it.
He's a good actor. He's really good in Last King of Scotland. He's overshadowed by Forest Whitaker because he's such a like big performance, but he's really good in it. He's good in Atonement. He's a good actor. He's just one of those like pretty guys. He's almost like a Clive Owen where they were like, what do we do with you? And then he just kind of slips into other lesser known parts. Steve Jobs, which I remember liking Steve Jobs, but I could.
No, it's a decent movie from what I remember. Like, obviously the Aaron Sorkin script is a little much, but it works. But of course he does this thing at the end where it's like stand up and clap.
Yeah.
Stand up and clap, everyone. Dude, it's rough. It's a rough ending.
Music in your pocket.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember Fassbender and Seth Rogen being really good in it.
And he does a good thing structurally, too, where he's jumping. I think there's three different time periods, and Blackberry does a similar thing, too. I'm sure they just wholesale ripped it off. But yeah, they changed the aesthetics really well from each time period, which was.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. I think it's Alvin Cookler or whatever who shot it. Yeah. And then he does Yesterday, a movie that I guess people did for some reason like, I guess because it falls into the Slumdog crowd pleaser kind of mode of his. And he has no other fucking movies since, and he has nothing. He's nothing in development.
Except for 28 months later.
Okay. I guess, is that actually like happening right now though?
Yes. I swear. I don't think it's like a meme or something. Last time I checked, it was a real thing.
It's going down. Okay.
Yeah.
I know he did like those two series. He did that series Trust, which was like the other version of All the Money in the World, the Getty kidnapping movie. But he did it as a series. And then he did the Sex Pistols series, which I heard was horrible.
No, I didn't even know that came out, but
yeah,
that sounds like it wouldn't be good.
He does direct theater, though. He also does theater. He's a really eclectic guy.
I guess there's this urban myth going around here at the moment. It's about a beach.
A secret beach.
On an island that no one can get to.
Somewhere, paradise must exist.
I just feel like everyone tries to do something different, but they always wind up doing the same damn thing.
So let's go.
Hidden island.
We have so much here to inspire.
They found all they ever wanted. A temptation.
Would you like to come to the beach with me?
They had never known. And a secret no one ever escaped.
Never leave us. Oh my God. Never leave.
I saw them kill four people with my own eyes.
Can you hear the dolphins cry?
Go home. Forget this island.
So you didn't see this when it came out?
I mean, I could have. It seems like a movie my parents might have taken me to, but I would have been seven, so it would have been a bit much.
A bit much, yeah.
For young Alex, but I kind of wish I did. It would seem like such a cool movie to see at that time. Leonardo DiCaprio, Danny Boyle, sort of coming off Trainspotting.
You can see how a studio is like, oh yeah, we're cooking up something good here. We got a hit book. Mm-hmm. That we're going to adapt this Alex Garland book, which came out in 1996, and I think was a really big book, especially for like Gen Xers. I remember my brother knew that book. John Hodge, Danny Boyle's regular kind of collaborator who adapted Trainspotting, Shallow Grave, adapts the book. It was something that they, you know, I think Fox was developing for a couple of years there. Originally, Ewan McGregor was going to be the lead because that's his boy. And that's the beginning of their fucking fallout, which I think goes on until Trainspotting 2. So they basically have a 15-year beef where Ewan McGregor feels slighted and they don't speak. They don't work together. I guess in some ways I understand if I'm Ewan McGregor thinking like, hey, I really need this big like American breakout lead role. This would be really great for me. I actually think Ewan McGregor might be a better choice.
Oh, absolutely. Because the movie requires a character that's way more of a cipher. And Leo goes so big that it's hilarious all the time. Like some of the ways that he's uttering or screaming in this movie is just pure comedy gold. It's so funny. There's a scene where he's in the ocean and someone's like, oh my God, there's a fin. He's like, a shark fin?
Yeah.
It's like, no, what else would it be, bro?
we would literally unpack that performance because I normally wouldn't say, you know, Ewan McGregor I think is good and can be great, but I think he has that kind of wide-eyed look that you kind of need for this guy to show the full transformation of him. But yeah, it's about this guy, Richard. He's a young American. He's in Bangkok. He is a man who will do anything for a new experience. He's basically the yes man in Bangkok. If someone tells him to do something, including drinking snake blood, which is the first thing you see him do, he will do it. He is given a map to an island that may or may not exist that is basically like a secret community. So he's given this map by a man named Daffy, played by Robert Carlyle, who is said that he was on the island. He's clearly lost his mind. At times you wonder if he is even a figment of his imagination. Daffy commits suicide. So Richard gets the map. Richard also has a very hot French couple living next door to him at this hostel. And he's very horny for Francoise, played by Virginie Ledoyen.
From Cold Water.
From Cold Water, yes. he's very horny for her, so he invites her and her boyfriend, even though he's basically like, I know you have a boyfriend, but I really want to fuck you, so please come with me. And the boyfriend's played by Guillaume Canet.
I don't think he's been in like anything else.
Guillaume Canet is, he's a director. He directed a movie called Tell No One that came out in like 2008 that was like kind of a weird big hit. I think it was going to have an American remake at some point. I think he mostly kind of transitioned into directing though. So yeah, they're given the map. They go to this island. It's real. It's also on the same island as a fucking weed farm run by some scary Thai men with guns. And then they show up and they discover the island that is a community that can only probably be described as, for me personally, my worst nightmare.
Just that's like Midsommar. It's scary.
It is like Burning Man, but you can't leave. It's run by Tilda Swinton as Sal.
Which is insane. How did she get involved in this movie?
I mean, Tilda Swinton, you got to remember, like, I think in the 90s.
I mean, she takes a lot of chances, but, like, this is something else.
I'm assuming she probably wanted to work with Danny Boyle.
Yeah, it's a good opportunity.
And it's a big American role for her at the time. She's not, you know, at her Michael Clayton level yet. It's basically Richard on this island, slowly losing his mind. He gets the Apocalypse Now fucking arc.
Yeah, this is literally Apocalypse Now for bros.
I think that's the main thing is, like, with this movie, I'm kind of like, I don't think that anybody fully knew what they were trying to say with this.
No, because nothing rings through. Like once the movie ends, like I just was like, what? They try to sort of dip their toes in things thematically or sort of point towards something, but they never make it a part of the movie in any concrete way. And it's not even scratching the surface where if you're like an audience member, you can sort of lean into it. Like it's just nothing's connecting and nothing's working.
I think as a kid, like I didn't remember loving this movie by any means. It had a big, I think, impression on me at the time, but it was a movie that I couldn't really, like, I remembered so many parts of it. I remembered, like, the shark attack right. and the video game sequence and, like, the sex scene and the under the waterfall. All this shit that, like, I remembered so many images from it. And I remembered the vibe of it because it is a very kind of late 90s, early 2000s transitionary, like, again, like the Danny Boyle trip hop style, which right. I'm kind of a sucker for. So on paper, I should like this movie, maybe. It has a pretty solid soundtrack from like Moby and Underworld and Uncle.
Got some Uncle, yeah.
Yeah, you get some Uncle. I guess I was trying to figure out the entire time. I was just like, I don't know what is not fully connecting about this movie. But I think that the main thing that I took away from it is I think Danny Boyle is too, I don't think he's cynical enough to make this movie.
Right, right. Because like, I feel like Leonardo DiCaprio's character should be more transformed by the end of it, or there should be more of an indictment of his character, but it's like he wants to have his cake and eat it too, where it's like, it's sort of pointing towards an indictment or like, yeah. you know, he's going to change, but also it's trying to crowd please too much to like make a statement about anything. Also, Danny Boyle does this thing where he'll have alternative endings for his movies. And I guess the original ending was Tilda Swinton kills herself.
Yes.
At the end of
yeah,
the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is wild. I mean, that doesn't work either because like after it, like the cynicism doesn't really stay or he doesn't really make a statement.
No.
It's like, you know, life carries on and it's still beautiful kind of thing.
There's a really interesting movie in here, I think, about these well-off white kids that are looking for some sort of an escape. And it's very like pre-internet, pre-millennial kind of escape where they're like, we want to fucking be outdoors, we want to connect with nature. It's funny how like it doesn't seem to be aware enough to even comment on like the scene when Leo and Tilda Swinton are going to go back to Bangkok to get supplies and stuff like that. They have to like re-up and get rice and shit like that. And it's funny because you have this whole sequence of everybody on the island basically being like, get me this, get me this, get me this. And you realize that these people can't live without these things that they still love from like, you know, their old lives and shit like that. Like they really can't fucking live without it. So it all feels like this kind of like posturing thing, but it doesn't feel like Danny Boyle is aware enough of that. And again, I haven't read the Alex Garland book. I feel like Alex Garland is a much more cynical writer. And so maybe it's kind of like a clashing of styles in that way. Because I feel like maybe if Alex Garland directed this, it would be more.
Yeah, there would be almost more like a sci-fi element to it or something a bit more off-putting. Like the tone of this, there's no consistent tone at all. There's no feeling of like we're in a sort of nightmare or fever dream or things are sort of off. Nothing ever feels off. It just feels like you're watching sort of just a regular ass studio movie. And I think that's like the biggest problem too. It doesn't commit to anything fully.
I would normally say like, oh, like maybe you can find like the indictment of this type of culture or this type of like appropriation, like subtly being a part of the story. But I just don't think that Danny Boyle's intentions are like there. I don't think that he's that kind of guy. So like you can create those indictments in your head, or you can watch it as an audience member who likes shit like this and is like, fuck yeah, this is tight. You know.
Right. Well, I think it inadvertently invites the same sort of viewers that it's trying to critique. Like the people, I think the people who love this movie are the ones that should be taking like the biggest messages away from it. And maybe, maybe they do. I can't speak for that crowd, but and I'm not saying like every movie needs to be like a message movie or like change the world or change your perspective, but it does seem like it is trying to reach for that. I mean, we've talked about a lot of movies on this podcast about sort of like the male ego or male competition or, you know, being from a certain place and wanting to go into like a darker territory in your psyche. And I feel like this movie treads on that. But again, it doesn't know what to do with it. It doesn't know where to go with it. You know, it's a very just A to Z movie, just very linear. And
I wonder like how much of that is Danny Boyle kind of like caving to making like a big studio movie. Cause like you have to think at the time too, okay, this is Leo's first big post Titanic role. Like Man in the Iron Mask, I know comes out like 2 months after Titanic, but that doesn't really count. Also, like whatever, who remembers that fucking movie? So this is like he's being really picky after Titanic. And it's like, okay, this is like the beginning of him being like, okay, I'm gonna do like one movie a year that's really important to me. Before he starts working with Scorsese.
And then he's trying to break into something darker too. Cause if I'm not mistaken, I think he was trying to do American Psycho.
He was trying to do American. This is the movie that took him away from American Psycho. And thank God, because I think the whole thing was with American Psycho, they couldn't afford him. And also I don't think that he wanted to, I think that his people were kind of like, no, he can't play that character as evil as he is.
And so then, I think there's probably a lot of compromising between agents, studios, the director.
Yeah. It's interesting how he does Titanic. He could have done Boogie Nights and does Titanic instead.
Right.
Could have done American Psycho, does The Beach instead. I think both movies are better off for that. I guess I would more so rather see him in Boogie Nights than American Psycho, just because. But again, both those parts, Dirk Diggler and Patrick Bateman, are so intrinsically just like tied to those actors now that play them, especially Bale. I mean, there's not a single, like if you reread American Psycho now, you just hear Bale's voice. There's no way to not hear Christian Bale. That he is the character. But Leo here, it's like, it's kind of also like the end of him looking somewhat like he always has that boyishness about him that he carries even into older age. And that's what's kind of that's why it was like always kind of like, I think, hard to take him seriously in certain parts, because even as his face started to get like a little wider, he still had the boyishness there.
Yeah.
But here is like, I'm like, is this the last time that he was just like really skinny?
Yeah, well, Danny Boyle told him to lose 20 pounds for the role, which I'm not sure I fully understand. Like, I can sort of get him wanting Leo to look even more boyish, though again he's still in that space where he looks pretty boyish and becoming quote unquote like a man or something. I don't know. I don't think it was necessary. He's trying to, in certain scenes, bring himself to this emotional place that he's just going too far in certain scenes. It doesn't make sense to be this explosive.
I agree. I think that he actually makes the character really a character that's already going to be unlikable on paper. I think that he makes him even more unlikable.
Yeah. And the movie almost seems to be making fun of it. Like they're making fun of like sort of like Americans are being stupid and like there are other like sort of like cliche stereotypes thrown in, which I maybe was at the time supposed to be like an attempt at humor, but it just like sort of backfires on itself. Like it's just cringy.
Yeah, it's definitely like his last role as like a young man. But the way that he plays it, like I was watching it with my girlfriend and we were just like, this guy sucks.
This guy's so, so annoying. Are you kidding
I have
me?
So many notes that are just like, this guy's a loser. Like,
and
this guy,
and it doesn't even seem that naive because he's making like pretty deliberate choices.
He does. No, you're right. Like he's making very deliberate choices and you're like, which could have been interesting to be like, oh, you have this guy who comes to Bangkok is like, oh, I'm like a wide-eyed, naive American who's open to like new experiences. Mm-hmm. And as it goes on, you start to realize like, no, this guy's actually like a really bad person, or he's a lot more kind of calculating than he has led people to believe.
And he's sort of a sociopath who doesn't realize he's a sociopath.
Exactly.
Like he'll have sort of like grandiose sort of realizations, at least in his own head, but then he'll just like forget about them like the next
day. So my thing with Leo is like, because I obviously Leonardo DiCaprio is a great actor. I'm not ever going to deny that. I feel like when I talk to a lot of people who were like, oh, like Leo's like one of the best actors, I'm like, I have a hard time putting him in like the top tier of guys. Cause I'm like, I think it started because I was talking to somebody about The Departed And I was like, I think if he went supporting, he would have been kind of a shoo-in to win for The Departed. Because he's great in it. I think he's good in every Scorsese movie. Gangs in New York, it's been a while. I don't remember. But I rewatched The Aviator last year and I was like, I mean, he's a little miscast, but he's fucking great in it. In The Departed, I just remember I was like, Matt Damon gives the best performance in that movie. Like, he is unafraid to play the worst parts of that guy.
Yeah.
And Damon's a much more generous actor in that way. So I'm like, I think Matt Damon, to me, I was like, no, I think Damon's a better actor overall. I think he's...
Well, I was thinking about Ben Affleck and Matt Damon watching The Beach. I was like, they would have been so funny.
Matt Damon would have actually been so good in this.
Yeah, I think so too. I think Matt Damon would have been perfect in the movie. And I think someone like Ben Affleck would have made this very funny.
Ben Affleck would have been so unlikable.
Yeah, well, so unlikable.
You have to think about like Affleck and like Forces of Nature and like Reindeer Games mode. Like,
yeah.
Because when Affleck has to play like a fucking smug American, like he's so smug.
He's so good at it too.
He's so good, but it's just like young Affleck with his kind of shit-eating grin, like when he was this like age.
Yeah, but I think you're right. I think Matt Damon would have been perfect.
Because Damon has, again, he has the best of both worlds where he can play the like, no, I'm like, I'm a good guy. I'm trying to be a good guy. But he's also unafraid to come off unlikable. And I think Leo, at this point, he's trying to be taken more seriously and he wants to be a serious actor. But he's still, I feel like there's still like a posturing to the performance that you get.
Yeah, he's trying to prove something. Like, I'm acting. Yeah, exactly. You see me? I'm acting here. It's like, we see you, bro. We see you.
And he still has that, which is why I almost prefer him more in like Wolf of Wall Street or Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where like he gets to be comedic, he gets to be lighter.
When it's more character driven, I feel like Richard, again, is a character that's way more of just a cipher for the audience. I mean,
yes.
I hate narration, and this movie is full of Richard's narration, which is, again, you just hold on to Richard and that's like who you're following. You're like, this sucks. I want to let go so bad. Can we not do this?
Yeah.
But when he gets the chance to play like comedic characters or just characters in general, it's genuinely surprising. It's like, do this more, dude. What are you doing?
Yeah. Well, he doesn't have much to latch onto here. And also, I think you do need, with a guy like Leo, especially at this time in his career, because I think Leo, the closest actor I actually compared to Leo at this time was like a Shia LaBeouf, because I think they both have a very similar energy where they're fully committed. They are like, I am all in on what you want me to do. And they have that very big intensity in those big moments. And they're just naturally born movie stars. You're just like, this person has whatever that thing is. But sometimes, they go too big and it becomes just kind of funny to watch them explode because you're like, oh, these guys are just really annoying. It's funny because Shia LaBeouf does a similar movie. It's not super similar, but kind of in the 2010s called Charlie Countryman. I don't know if you've heard this movie.
It's sort of like a psychedelic movie. Like, it's a little trippy.
Yeah, he goes to Russia, I want to say. Yeah, I want to say it's Russia because it's Mads Mikkelsen and Evan Rachel Wood. He falls in love with this like gangster's girlfriend. And the whole movie is Shia LaBeouf just getting the shit beat out of him by Mads Mikkelsen because he's in love with his girlfriend.
That's so sick.
I kind of don't mind the movie. Again, has like a cool like...
But see, he gets punished like, in that movie. Score.
Yes,
he
gets whole beat movie up. Is him being like, please, I love you. And then Mads Mikkelsen beating the shit out of him and being like...
There are so many times where Leonardo DiCaprio's in really close. He's really close to being in danger of something. And the movie never allows itself to like punish him in any sort of way. I mean, he's going through the jungle and there's like people with like machine guns and he like somehow eats a caterpillar, which I think that looked real. It looked like he ate like a fucking actual caterpillar, which is crazy. Is like tripping balls in the woods and somehow survives like passing through like an army of men with guns.
He steals their guns because he becomes like one with the jungle. And I was like, weirdly, I was like, you know what? I would rather watch this part of the movie than the whole other part. I'm like,
because at least it's going. It's like, okay, let's just roll out the red carpet and just go big. Fuck it. Like the movie's already a mess.
The video game sequence. I was like, this is so goofy, but it kind of works with Boyle's like sensibilities. It's Looney Tunes. Yeah.
Yeah. It works.
Like, I can go with this. And Leo, again, he's a movie star. So I'm like, I will watch this guy run around the jungle. I will watch him.
And he looks deranged when he's doing it. Because he's very funny.
He gets to be all fucking in on it. He's like, no, he's never punished in this movie. I mean, the worst thing that happens to him is that like he doesn't get to fuck his hot French girlfriend anymore. But even by the end of it, she still seems to be kind of like, hey, we're cool though.
Yeah, what the fuck? Are you kidding me?
I'm still gonna email you.
I think you like ruined my boyfriend's life. You kind of ruined my life. Oh, also the scene where they're fucking underwater. One of the funniest sex scenes ever committed to any movie ever.
The CGI in this movie's nuts. There's a lot of crazy digital shots of like islands and stuff. So a very embarrassing thing about me that I'm sure my girlfriend will love to hear me talk about again, was that the reason that I remember the beach so much and that it had such an impression on me is because I remember that sex scene for some reason was like a weird sexual awakening for me when I was 11 years old. I mean, I thought that she was really hot. And then I was like, wow, this is crazy. You can have sex in a beach. Like, it's like this weird scene set to an All Saints song. I was like, what the fuck is this? So I always
remember this all makes sense. This makes sense now when you commented on my Cold Water review. You're like, where'd you see this? Probably not knowing that I did live in LA. I'm like, why does he want to see this movie so badly? Like, don't worry about it, dude.
Where did you find this?
Do you have a link?
Well, I just watched Cold Water for the first time a few months ago, and I was like, oh, well, I think she just looks like every girl I had a crush on when I was like 10, right. 12 years old, like her, like Rachel Lee Cook, and she's all that. I was like, oh, wow, yeah, there's just Shannon Sossaman. And I was like, there's a specific type of woman that I just was very attracted to as a kid. So that's the reason that the beach has had any type of cultural significance in my life for 23 years. And I'm sure some part of me was like, I should revisit this. And then when I watch that scene now, it's like 10 seconds.
And you're like, man, longer than me.
I know. I was like, and it's not sexy at all. I was like, but as a kid, I was like, wow, this is crazy.
They're going for so long. Wow.
Yeah. And I also just had such a hard time believing that this woman would be into this guy.
Yeah. She literally said, what is it early on? She's like, Leo is trying to be genuine towards her. And she's like, that sounds like something someone says when you're trying to fuck her. So I was in my head, I'm going, okay, just be shitty to her then.
Yeah, which he kind of like, does, I guess. He's like,
yeah, right. And then he just becomes a piece of shit. And she's like, I'll have sex with you. I'm like, all right.
Him and the boyfriend are weirdly beefing. And then he also just like disappears for a long period.
Yeah, no, I remember when he showed back up, I was like, where did he go? What happened to his arc? Like, what's going on with boy?
He's just gone. He's out of there. Once his chick is getting fucked, he's like, I guess I'll disappear. Also, if I were him, I'd be like, I don't really have a reason to stay on this island anymore. This is weird for me now.
Yeah. What am I going to do?
I should leave.
How'd you feel about that Tilda Swinton sex scene, though? That do something for you? You remember that one?
I think I did weirdly remember that because I remembered it being shot in silhouette.
Yeah.
I don't think that I had any type of sexual awakening with Tilda Swinton. Love Tilda Swinton, but I don't think that she was doing that for me.
There's like some mommy vibes with her. She's like, I'm mommy, essentially.
Yes. And then you get this like crazy shark attack later on that's really violent and like really wild and gory. One guy dies immediately. Another guy's fucked up. And then another guy's slowly dying. And again, it feels like the movie is maybe aware, but kind of not of the fact that the dude who's dying, they just like put him in a tent in the middle of the woods because they don't want to deal with him anymore because he's killing the vibes.
Yeah, literally. That's it. It's like, dude, you're just hanging around. All right. You got to fucking, can you die quick, please?
Yeah. They're like, dude, this is kind of a bummer. Like, because they're like, we need to get like medicine for this guy. And they're until this one's like, no, we can't. We can't do that. Like, they're going to know. They'll come to the island and they'll take it from us.
Well, but also, like, there's three Swedes, if I'm not mistaken. And
there
I
are,
think
yes.
Do all three of them get attacked?
Yes.
I feel like one of them they don't show, though.
One of them lives because it's like a minor thing. And then the
one's on
one,
the beach and then one's
one
in
dies
tent.
Right away. One is slowly dying. And that's the one that they put in a tent. And the French boyfriend is the only one who's like, this is fucked up. We got to take care of this guy. And he basically just becomes his doctor, which I'm assuming he is not qualified to do. And just like stays with him in a tent, which I was like, why are you staying on this island? Your chick is getting fucked by that American guy. And now you're a caretaker to this man who's dying slowly from a shark attack.
This movie teaches you can't be a good guy because look what you got to deal with. You got to deal with your girlfriend cheating on you. You got to help out the Swedish man who just got attacked by a shark and is bleeding everywhere. It's
horrible,
lot, dude.
It's horrible. And everyone probably smells like shit. Why are you here?
Oh, dude. I think we see one person shower and it's the guy who's like, oh, I need to get the fish smell off me. I need the fish smell off me.
There is no way that as somebody who is very like OCD and has a weird thing about dirt and fucking other like shit, there's no way that guy would live on this island. There's no way. You can't be that obsessed with being clean and be on that fucking island. But yeah, they basically are like, the vibes were bad, so they put him in a tent. And then even Leo's voiceover is like, everything got a lot better once we just got rid of him. And it just cuts to them playing volleyball again. And they're like, fuck yeah, dude. But I was like, again, like that could have been a funny satirical thing of like all these
but
white
it's so
people
flat.
Being like, the vibes are better now.
Oh my God. Yeah, that would be funny. That would be like,
Bobby comes back on. We'll be right back.
the jungle, I thought it was like a day. Literally, it's like this is just
he
a long
loses
day
his
for
mind
home.
After 24 hours.
Literally, starts and then he goes back to the beach. He's like, I guess I'm better now.
He's like totally like, fine.
Also, that when he fucking fights the shark, insane, dude.
Yes,
that shark looks hilarious. But when he comes back and he's giving that speech, he's like, you just gotta stay calm and party on.
Yes.
Like he doesn't learn shit.
He gives them like an eat, pray, love, like kind of monologue about fighting a shark. No, he sucks. And the whole thing is like so arrogant too. And everyone's like, dude, you're the shit.
He's also talking most of the time, like specifically to Alan Johnson from Peep Show. You ever see Peep Show?
No, I know the show. Which character is that?
Is the lone black dude. I can't remember his name in the movie.
Oh, okay. But... Yes. Yeah. Okay. I wanted him to just become a weed farmer with a machine gun. I was like, just have him fucking team up with the dudes.
Yeah.
Let him live his life as a weed farmer. The scene where like, cause the whole thing is like back on the, you know, back in Bangkok, he passes the island on to these like three fucking loser stoners or four, these two guys and their girlfriends. And is like, there's a beach. They get the stoner dudes and their girlfriends get to the island, but they can't quite figure out how to get to the beach. And they're just like camped out for a while. And that's why Leo's like sent into the woods, is because Tilda Swinton's like, you have to keep an eye on them and make sure that they don't get in here. And make sure that, you know, the fucking weed farmers with machine guns don't see them, which then leads to a scene where, again, like really brutal violence, where these four idiots are just fucking mowed down by these weed farmers because they stumble upon the like weed plantation and they're like, holy shit, look at all this bud. And then they die.
Which, give me more of that. Make it more like Hostel or something, you know?
Yeah.
Like people traveling, they think they're going to a beautiful place. Just fucking cut their heads off, man. Have a talking monkey fuck up their like their mission a bit.
Well, I guess like the Thai government was not happy about the movie because they thought that it was making them look bad, which I mean, it doesn't make them look, I don't think it really makes them look good or bad. It's just kind of like is.
Well, that also falls into an in-between category because supposedly they paid the Thai government $100,000 to shoot on this beach, which is like,
oh, and
usually they have to pay
it.
Like, well, they usually have to pay 10% of that, so they bribe them to do it. And and then they fucking destroyed the beach, made it like an environmental disaster essentially, that is still, I think, at least for years,
it's still
after
fucked. It's still fucked up. They destroyed it for good. Like, it's definitely like done for. The irony of this movie, and like, because that's probably what these people actually would have done on this beach, is like these white people would have fucking destroyed this whole area. Fox had to pay off, I guess. They made some sort of settlement for it, but they destroyed that beach in real life. And then the end is just like when he comes back to the island, he's like, we have to get out of here. And he's trying to get the chick's attention, his French girlfriend. I don't know if you noticed this, when he goes after her to get her attention, he body slams her.
Yeah, what the fuck? Like, it's really hard. No, he like it's really, really, really hard.
Body slams her.
Like, unless there's some sort of padding under her, but I don't think there was. Like, it looked really brutal. It looked really real, and it looked it hurt a lot.
Yeah, I was like,
was that necessary? Yeah, and there weren't like stuntmen. Like, it was definitely them. It's like the same thing with the caterpillar. I'm like, you could have gotten a fake caterpillar, you know, some CGI. The CGI is already terrible. Just could do a CGI caterpillar.
Well, yeah,
you know,
what
the fuck are you doing?
The way that it ends too, where they like leave the island, and then he's like in an internet cafe sometime later and gets an email with the photo of all of them on the beach. Like, remember the good times. No,
and
this
then
would be like a really traumatizing experience for everybody involved.
Yeah, I don't want to remember this at all.
I have no idea. Like,
I went to Belize when I was younger and had a little bit of like a menage a trois thing as well. And it was like, it ruined everyone involved. It wasn't like a positive experience.
This is bad.
This is not good. This is a learning experience. We need to learn stuff from this and change ourselves. The movie ends as an Apple commercial. It's pretty much like the last 2 minutes is like a prequel to Steve Jobs.
Yeah, he's just on an Apple computer in a fucking internet cafe. And he's like looking around to make sure like no one's looking at this photo. I'm like, no one gives a fuck about this photo of you and your friends on a beach, dude. But the fact that it ends with that is crazy. It does end with a really good Uncle song that is weirdly featured in a much better movie the same year called Dark Days.
Is that the one? It's a documentary about homeless people underground New York?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Both movies end with the same Uncle song, both released in 2000. One just happens to be a lot better. It's a very strange movie that still made a lot of money because it had Leonardo DiCaprio in it coming off of Titanic. It didn't do as well, I guess, in the US. They made it for $50 million. It ended up making almost $150 million worldwide. I imagine it made a fucking lot more on, you know, DVD and video. I'm sure the soundtrack sold some fucking records too. A movie that, you know, I think doesn't have much, like Man of the Iron Mask, does not have much cultural significance anymore because, after the beach, he gets into his procedural. He has Catch Me If You Can, Gangs of New York, Aviator, Departed, Blood Diamond, Revolutionary Road. The list goes on.
I will say this, the further I get away from the movie, not that I like it, but I have almost like, because the entire movie was like, it's one of those movies where you just start screaming at the TV. You're like, what the fuck are you doing? Jesus Christ. Yeah. The more I get away from it, I'm like, I kind of have not a respect or admiration, but it just sticks out as like a movie experience that's so bizarre and messy and just doesn't work at all. It just the fact that it exists is kind of nice. Like I can see myself falling asleep to it, like on an airplane or something like that.
But that's the thing is like, it shouldn't be a movie that has that effect on you.
Yeah, right. It's trying to be engaging.
I think it's a case of wrong director. It maybe Garland should have just adapted it himself. I'm not sure. Because 28 Days Later works for them.
Yeah. Also, I heard that there is the potentiality to make a TV series remake of The Beach directed by Amy Simons.
Yes, it was in development, I think, before COVID, and it's going to, I don't know if they're still doing it. Would be curious to see.
It is the perfect like movie to adapt to a TV series now, because I feel like in the 2000s, there was this like renaissance of movies that were like, you live a certain life, right? But you don't really know that there's a life beyond you. And now we sort of, or like the place you work at, you know, it's there's higher forces pulling the strings. And now we have that sort of more with like multiverse kind of stuff. Like it's gone full blown, just like, but there's so many TV shows. And I don't watch television that much, but a lot of my friends and my family do. And like, they'll tell me about shows. And I'm like, this just sounds like the same show you told me about last time, which again is literally about a group of people who either work at a place or they live somewhere.
Right.
And they don't realize they're in like a snow globe and someone else is like controlling it. There are other worlds out there. What?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was kind of like, you know, Lost effect. Yeah, I guess you could do The Beach like Lost or something. I don't know.
This is sort of a off topic. What do you think of The Beach Bum by Harmony Korine?
You know what? I don't love The Beach Bum, but I should revisit it because I know a lot of people love it. Yeah,
well,
because I love parts of it.
It fills the void that this movie can't, where it's like it takes the satirical and cynical aspect of The Beach and just amps it up to 10.
Sure.
Like, the movie's just pure hedonistic, just disregard for everything besides oneself. But it does have like a true emotional core, at least to me. Like there's that scene where like his wife dies and he has to deal with like the grief. And the movie just slows down. It just slows down and you just have to like deal with that for a bit. Of course, then it just goes back into like you're just like being a piece of shit the rest of the movie. But it's pretty fun.
I should rewatch it. It's rotten. So I know we wanted to cover it at some point. We wanted to do like a whole Harmony Korine series just because all of his movies are rotten except for Spring Breakers. Are you going to see Aggro Drift?
I really want to. Yeah, it looks crazy. Everything I've heard about it, I'm like, what? I think he was saying something recently where he was like, I just saw the trailer for the new Call of Duty video game and it looks better than anything Spielberg's ever done. I was like,
yeah, I heard him say that.
That's him. Yeah.
I think he's like starting a whole AI company, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean,
that one, but it makes sense for him.
It does, because he definitely likes to mess with like the medium. His whole entire career has been like movies have been around for fucking 100 years and no one's done much with the format. So just let him cook, you know, we'll see if it works.
If you pull that trigger, it's all fucking over and you know it.
Come on.
Because this time it's not like Christo rotting out in the woods when no one can see. It's not like the four people that I saw killed today. This time, everyone has to watch Sal. Everyone has to see what it takes to keep our little paradise a secret. Come on, everyone watch!
Shut up!
Everyone watch Sal do this!
Come on.
Yeah, go on, Sal, do it. Come on!
Do it!
Come on, do it, yeah! Let him see the blood this time, huh? Huh?
Anyway, this is Danny Boyle's lowest rated movie, lower than Lifeless Ordinary. This movie was 21%. Mike Clark of USA Today said, murky, pretentious, and torturously inert. Stephen Hunter watched most said, relentlessly beautiful and wholly annoying. Robert Horton of Film.com said, the opening reels here promise something big, but the movie settles for a sour, predetermined funk. Lord of the Flies as imagined by a Nintendo junkie. That's actually pretty on point.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Ann Hornaday of Baltimore Sun said, terrific looking in the extreme. The Beach is the movie equivalent of vacation reading. No more demanding and no less satisfying than a sandy paperback left on a damp towel. And finally, Roger Ebert said, a seriously confused film that makes three or four passes at being a better one and doesn't complete any of them.
Man,
that's Ebert, true.
Coming through.
Who's your MVP for The Beach?
Ooh.
I mean, performance-wise, it's Tilda. For me, like, I don't think that she's the only one to me that I'm like gives a completely like good performance.
I'm trying to think. I think for me, it's got to be the CGI shark. I think that's my MVP. That shark, shark went nuts. Yeah, that's, the shark was crazy. And the monkey, too. Shouts out to that monkey.
The monkey, the caterpillar, the shark. I'm trying to think if this is Leo's worst performance.
Yeah, going through his catalog in my head right now, that it has to be.
I'm trying to think what would be his worst performance. Like, I don't...
Because his younger performances are actually really, really good.
Yeah, he's... I don't remember Man in the Iron Mask, so I can't really comment on that. He's great in Catch Me If You Can. Gangs in New York, he's kind of still in, like, striving mode. He's like, I want to be great. I'm trying to think of his worst performance. I think it's this, yeah.
Because even, like, Gilbert Grape, where it's like he's stepping into terrain where it's like, that's... You can fuck this like up really kid. Bad. But yeah, he's actually really good in the role, though. You know, yeah. Obviously maybe it hasn't aged well in terms of like doing a performance sure. like that, but he's legitimately incredible yeah. in that performance.
Yeah, I think this is one of the only performances of his where I would say I just don't like him in it. I don't think he's great in Romeo and Juliet. I think he's good in it. He's so overshadowed by like John Leguizamo and Harold Perrineau, but he's good. He's the right look for it. He has the perfect look. And Body of Lies is a movie I definitely do not remember, but I don't love him in The Revenant. It sucks that he won for that, but I get why that was the one, I guess.
Yeah, well, he definitely just brings all of the like Leo isms to that movie where he's screaming, he's being very physical. I mean, that movie doesn't have to deliver a lot of dialogue. It just, it totally makes sense that he'd, and also he looks pretty haggard in that movie. So,
yeah, he did everything you're supposed to do to win an Oscar. Right. He checked all the boxes. I think he should have won for Wolf of Wall Street. You know what, actually? I love him in Shutter Island.
Mm.
I think he's so fucking good in Shutter Island.
I think he's really good in that movie, too. And Shutter Island, for me, is one of the first movies I ever watched where I realized something about my taste in filmmaking or in terms of watching films, where I watched the whole movie and I saw it in theaters with my parents. And I was entertained. I was engaged. I was enjoying it. And then the ending happened. And I was in my head just like, fuck this movie. There's no point to rewatch it at all. I hate these things where it's like it's all taking place in someone's head or like it's all a dream. It's like movies are already a dream.
Sort of no, I know out. What you mean. I think that it's, you know what I would say is the best reason to rewatch it? Mark Ruffalo is so much better when you rewatch it. When you know his character's arc, he's actually, because I remember the first time I watched it, I was like, Ruffalo's kind of weird in this. And then when I saw it a second time, I was like, oh, he's so good in this, actually.
No, I mean, I've rewatched it. I've seen it since. And like, I like the movie in terms of just a piece of entertainment, but sure. I don't like it as a concept or in its totality. Like there's that scene with Leo and I think Michelle Williams, right?
Sure, yeah.
And where they're like, it's very surreal. They're like hugging each other and she turns to ash and it's very emotional. Like it's an incredible scene. It's something you can show to someone where it's like, you can edit a movie like this if you want. You're allowed to do like weird stuff like this. But for whatever reason, I was like, maybe it's a philosophical thing or sort of like a certain way that like I view movies. But like, again, I can watch and be entertained by it, but I can't fully say that what that movie does, I enjoy as something I want out of movies.
Yeah, sure. I understand that. That's fair. And as far as this being like a misfire for Boyle, I think it is. And I say that as somebody, again, who's not like a massive Boyle fan, but I think when he's on, he's really on. And it's kind of like, I think he's a director like Spike Lee, where it's like the cliche thing is to say like, oh, Trainspotting is your best movie, or Do the Right Thing is your best movie. But it's like, well, Do the Right Thing and Trainspotting are kind of your best movies.
Right. Because everything fell into place. Everything worked.
Yeah. Well, that's that. Tell people again where they can find you. Remind them, Alex.
I'm on Letterboxd under Alex Colpan, just my name. And then on Instagram, Young Grown Ass Man.
That's right. You're the Young Grown Ass Man. They know
that.
Yes,
sir.
Please follow Alex. Alex, please come back soon. I know you will be. And thank you for being a kind of last minute addition to the episode. So I didn't have to sit here by myself talking about the beach for an hour, which would have been weird. I don't think I would get 20 minutes probably. But
yeah, no, I can't imagine that being fun.
Sometimes you get episodes where you're like, I thought this was maybe going to be a little more interesting to talk about than it was. But I guess it's not. And that's okay. Next week, we'll be talking about our first Wes Anderson movie with The Life Aquatic, his only rotten film.
Wait, that's rotten?
Yeah. One of my favorites of his, too, I would say. Probably the last time I really like loved a Wes Anderson movie was Life Aquatic. So we will be discussing Life Aquatic. What else we got going on this month? We're going to be talking about Darren Aronofsky's The Fountain. And we're going to be talking about Park Chan-wook's Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, as well as Spike Lee's ill-advised remake of Old Boy. And if you are listening to this on Apple or Spotify, any of those podcast apps, please throw a little 5-star review down if you don't mind. Write a review if you have something nice to say, or if you have nothing nice to say, you can say bad things about us. We can take it. And if you are listening on Patreon, we cannot thank you enough. A very special thank you to our top subscribers, Royce Burke, Victoria Kruger, Aiden Brain, Andrea Ferris, ASR, Ben Beakey, Devin Hansen, Aero Cyano, Gene Yonarel, Constant Carino, Graham Redman, Neil Fuller, Matthew Hayes, Alex Colpin, he's right here, Brittany Barker, Britton Chance, Brody Anderson, Eric Hockman, Jade Yankowski, Madeline Dugan, Mary Caitlin Koiski, Nick Laskin, and Ryan Oliver. Thank you so much. We could not do this without you. Alex, thank you again for being here with me.
Thanks for having me. It was really fun.
Absolutely. And we will see you next week.